Gas prices hit a new high this week. Here in the United States, the average cost of a gallon of gasoline is now $1.80, or 2 cents higher than last year at this time. Strong demand in the United States and China, glitches in America's refinery capacity, and reduced production by major oil supplying countries have all contributed to the price hike, which is not expected to come down anytime soon. Maybe no other expense more vividly reveals the potential connections between world events, big business, international relations, national politics, the environment, and the American household, as much as the price of a gallon of gas. Paul Roberts is the author of the upcoming book, The End of Oil, and joins us from member station KUOW in Seattle. Mr. Roberts, thanks very much for being with us.
Scott, thanks for having me.
Do turmoil in Iraq and events like the explosions this week in Saudi Arabia affect oil prices in a way we can see?
They do in the short term. And so what you'd expect, and certainly what the administration had hoped, was that this would eventually work itself out of the system and you'd see oil prices come down from where they are right now, which is $35, $36 a barrel, down to the mid to high 20s, which everyone agrees is tolerable. And in fact, they haven't. And really what's happening is you're seeing the emergence of a new theory that with the erosion of this spare capacity of oil production, that high oil prices are here to stay, and just a gradual trend toward higher prices.
Are oil fields around the world just getting tapped out?
Parts of the world they are. I mean, outside of OPEC, the world looks like a pincushion. We've drilled pretty much everywhere, and we know where the oil is, and oil companies are really struggling to replace their reserves, that is, to find oil as fast as they're pumping it out of the ground. You know, a company like Shell Oil, which has had a lot of trouble recently.
The major executives there had to resign for overstating the company's reserves in Oman by more than 20%.
That's right. And really, Shell's problem is it wasn't discovering oil as fast as it needs to. An oil company like Shell, which is producing somewhere around 2 million barrels a day, needs to be discovering at least that many barrels, you know, replacing every barrel that it sells with another barrel of new oil. And Shell wasn't doing it. And in order to avoid a fallout in its share price, it appears that it had to misstate its oil reserves. Mm-hmm. And the question for oil analysts and pretty much everyone is whether that was because Shell didn't do its job right, it didn't invest enough money looking for new oil, or whether it's simply getting too hard to find new oil.
Do you want to venture a guess on that?
I think it's both. I mean, there's a larger industry-wide problem, which is that it's getting harder and harder to find new oil, you know, outside of OPEC. Mm-hmm. And right now, we use about 29 billion barrels of oil every year. That's oil that we put in our gas tanks, mm-hmm. in our factories, furnaces, and we're discovering around 9 billion barrels a year. So for every 3 barrels of oil we use, we only find another one. And if you or I were to manage our bank account that way, yeah, we'd be living with our parents, you know, in no time.
The oil-producing countries must be concerned that they're going to turn up dry pretty soon, aren't they?
Places like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Iraq have a great deal of oil left. And so for them, the question is, can they get the money in to expand their production capacity fast enough? Outside of countries with a lot of oil, the question is, can we find enough? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when will our production peak? And so, you know, we see production peaks all around the world outside of OPEC. In the U.S., for example, our production peaked.
You mean
peaked.
North Sea or Mexico?
The British part of the North Sea peaked last year. Mexico is expected to peak in a couple of years. The U.S. peaked in 1972, and it caught everyone by surprise, with the exception of a few geologists who had been effectively ignored because the establishment believed that American oil production would just continue upward pretty much forever. And so when U.S. production peaked, two things happened. One, OPEC realized that they had us over a barrel, and two, everyone around the world began to ask, well, if the U.S. can peak. And recall, at the time, the U.S. was one of the world's biggest producers, had been the leader of the oil industry, and suddenly it had peaked. And so if they could peak, what about the rest of the world?
Seems to me that oil industry people over the years have expressed confidence that new methods for extracting the oil can begin to compensate for some of that.
Well, and the oil industry is probably, I would venture to say that it's the most technically advanced industry on the planet. They have these high-resolution images that, you know, basically lets them look underground so they can see what's down there in three dimensions. Then they have drills that are, you know, fantastic. I mean, it's no longer the case where you just pound a drill down to the rock. These drills can go miles, 5, 6, 7 miles underground. They can go horizontally. They can change direction. They have sensors that allow them to essentially smell the oil and natural gas down there. And so, yes, they've been able to find oil more easily and extract it more efficiently. That said, this technology knife cuts both ways because it lets us see that there isn't as much oil as there used to be.
OPEC recently declined to increase production despite being asked to do so by the United States. Now, the United States consumes about a quarter of the world's oil. Why wouldn't OPEC oblige their biggest customer?
You know, OPEC for the past year has been waging kind of an undeclared price war in the sense that they're keeping prices high, prices that are above the price band that they themselves kind of agreed to several years ago. And, you know, Al Naimi, the Saudi oil minister, effectively said he didn't want to see a single surplus barrel of oil on the market in the second quarter of this year. And I can't really imagine a more aggressive instance of economic warfare than that. Mm-hmm. So when you hear claims that the Saudis had a deal with the White House to keep, you know, gas prices down in time for the election, it's hard to square with what's going on right now.
We should explain. Bob Woodward, in his recent book, includes the claim that Prince Bandar, Saudi Arabia's longtime ambassador to the United States, promised President Bush that the Saudis would lower the price of gas in time for the election. You think, however, that that story just doesn't jibe with the policies that we see now?
I think it's completely possible that Bandar made that kind of a promise. And the Saudis are prone to telling people what they think they want to hear, and they've done that a lot with the U.S. And it's also true that the Saudis have a history of being very willing to be our oil buddies. You know, they've bailed us out from a number of oil crises. They, you know, pumped more oil post 9/11 to calm the markets. They pumped more oil when Saddam invaded Kuwait in 1990. You know, and there's even evidence that they pumped a lot of oil in the late 70s, you know, to basically glut the market, drop prices into the basement, and wipe out the Soviet oil industry. You know, at the time, oil was the only source that the Soviets had for hard currency. And by dropping the price, the Saudis probably helped accelerate the demise of the Soviet Union. In the current context, however, it's hard to see how the Saudis could, on the one hand, be promising to keep prices low when everything else they're doing seems to be engineering prices staying high.
Realistically, how much can the President of the United States, whoever he or she is, do to affect the price of oil?
There's very few things that a president can do to change the price of oil, to bring it up or down. You know, certainly Iraq was part of a plan. You know, if we could, in a post-Saddam Iraq, bring in investment, rebuild their oil industry. They've got so much oil. You know, and if we could talk Iraq into leaving OPEC, kind of becoming an oil ally of the West, you know, and raise production, we could flood the market with cheap oil, bring the price down, which would be a boon to the U.S. and Europe, which depend on oil. At the same time, deprive OPEC of its pricing power. And although that looked good on paper, it hasn't penciled out. Mm-hmm. And it really points up the danger of an energy policy that focuses so heavily on supply, which, you know, given that that supply has to come from foreign producers, and given that foreign producers are, in the main, incredibly unstable, it's left American energy security vulnerable to, you know, the political turmoil in nations that we really can't control. And it's forced us to be intimately concerned with the internal affairs of countries where we'd otherwise have no business being.
Mr. Roberts, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Paul Roberts, author of the upcoming book, The End of Oil.